Chapter 13. The Long Trail. It was in the air. White Fang sensed the coming disaster even before there was real evidence of it. "Listen to that, will you?" Matt exclaimed at supper one night. Weed and Scott listened. Through the door came a low, anxious whine. "I do believe the wolf knows what you're doing," Matt said.
"What on earth would I do with a wolf in California?" Scott demanded. "White men's dogs would be lost against him. He'd kill them on sight. If he doesn't bankrupt me with claims for damages, the authorities will take him away from me and put him down. It would be ridiculous of me to take that dog south with me."
"I agree with you," was Matt's answer, though his employer was not quite satisfied with him. "But how on earth he knows you're going is what gets me."
"It's beyond me, Matt," Scott answered with a sad shake of the head.
Then came the day when, through the open cabin door, White Fang saw the bag on the floor and his master packing things into it. The normally calm atmosphere of the cabin was strangely full of agitation and unrest. Here was real evidence. His master was preparing for another departure, and since he had not taken him with him before, he could also expect to be left behind now. That night, he gave out the long wolf howl. He pointed his mouth to the cold stars and told them his grief. Inside the cabin, the two men had just gone to bed.
"He's gone off his food again," Matt remarked from his bunk. "From the way he behaved the other time you went away, I wouldn't be surprised if he dies this time."
The blankets in the other bunk stirred in annoyance.
"Oh, shut up," Scott cried through the darkness. "You nag too much."
The next day, White Fang's anxiety was even more noticeable. He followed at his master's heels whenever he left the cabin, and sat on the step whenever he was inside. Through the open door, he could see the luggage on the floor. White Fang whined as he watched. Later on, two Indians arrived. White Fang watched them closely as they threw the luggage onto their shoulders and were led off down the hill by Matt. After a time, Matt returned. The master came to the door and called White Fang inside.
"You poor thing," he said gently, rubbing White Fang's ears and caressing his back. "I'm hitting the trail, old man, where you cannot follow. Now give me a growl, the last goodbye growl."
But White Fang refused to growl. Instead, after a sad, searching look, he pushed his head out of sight between his master's arm and body. From the Yukon River, they heard the siren of a steamboat.
"You've got to cut it short," cried Matt. "Be sure and lock the front door. I'll go out the back. Be quick."
The two doors slammed at the same moment, and Weed and Scott waited for Matt to come round to the front. From inside the door came a low whining and sobbing. Then there were two long sniffs.
"You must take good care of him, Matt," Scott said as they started down the hill. "Write and let me know how he gets on."
"Sure," Matt answered. "But listen to that, will you?"
Both men stopped. White Fang was howling as dogs howl when their masters lie dead. His grief was heartbreaking. Scott stood on the boat near the gangplank and shook hands with Matt, who was preparing to go ashore. But Matt's hand lost its grip as his gaze fixed on something behind Scott. Scott turned to see. Sitting on the deck several meters away and watching hopefully was White Fang.
"Did you lock the front door?"
Matt asked. Scott nodded and asked,
"How about the back?"
"You bet I did,"
was the reply. White Fang remained where he was, making no attempt to approach.
"I'll have to take him ashore with me," said Matt.
He took a couple of steps towards White Fang, who slipped away from him. Matt ran towards him, but White Fang dodged between the legs of the other passengers. He dodged all Matt's efforts to capture him. But when his master spoke, White Fang came to him with immediate obedience. Scott patted White Fang, but suddenly bent closer and pointed out fresh-made cuts on his jaws and between his eyes. Matt passed his hand along White Fang's belly.
"We completely forgot the window," he said. "He's all cut underneath. He must have jumped right through it."
But Whedon Scott was not listening. He was thinking rapidly. The steamboat hooted a final announcement of departure. Scott grasped Matt's hand.
"Goodbye, Matt, old man," he said. "About the wolf, you needn't write. I'll write to you about him."
Matt paused halfway down the gangplank.
"He'll never stand the climate," he shouted, "unless you clip him in warm weather."
The gangplank was pulled up, and the steamboat swung out from the bank. Whedon Scott waved a last goodbye. Then he turned and bent over White Fang, who was standing by his side.
"Now growl, damn you, growl," Scott said,
as he patted White Fang's head and rubbed his ears.